Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, November 13th, 2025. We'll start with a photo essay on the front page headlined Environment, Northern Lights, Shimmer in Night. Geomagnetic storm pushes Aurora Borealis farther south. There are four photographs showing the vibrant reds and greens of the recent Aurora Borealis, or the Northern Lights. The first is captioned, Northern Lights dance across the sky above wind turbines outside of Warrensburg on Tuesday, November 11th. Multiple coronal mass ejections together caused a severe geomagnetic storm, creating colorful displays in the atmosphere much more south. The second is captioned, Northern Lights fill the sky above farms outside of Warrensburg on Tuesday, November 11th. The next is captioned, Northern Lights illuminate the sky outside of Harristown on Tuesday, November 11th. And the final photo is captioned, Northern Lights illuminate the sky outside of Harristown on Tuesday, November 11th. Photos are attributed to Joseph Ressler Photos, Herald and Review. Decatur Schools. District hikes up graduation standards. New credit minimums set to better prepare students for college. By Valerie Wells. Decatur. Decatur Public School students will have new graduation requirements, beginning with the class of 2028. The change is being made to bring Decatur in line with area districts and to better prepare students for college, the military, or the workforce. Many of our students arrive ill-prepared for collegiate work, military, and the workforce, said Edwin Robinson, Director of Teaching and Learning Secondary. We're raising the bar. The district has added electives and career and technical education classes that will help students earn those extra required credits, he said. Students who are juniors and seniors this year must have 22 credits to graduate, while this year's freshmen and sophomores will need to earn 24 credits. Classifications will be adjusted to reflect a student's credits if they don't have enough to qualify for the next grade classification, effective immediately. Freshmen will have less than 5 credits, sophomores 5 to 11 credits, juniors 12 to 17 credits, and seniors 18 credits or more. Students who fall behind will have access to APEX credit recovery, tutoring, and summer school as needed, he said. Counselors are instructed to meet with students in all grade levels each quarter and to make sure students and their families are aware when a student is falling behind, so there won't be any surprises. Among similar surrounding districts, nearly all require more credits for graduation than Decatur's current 22 credits. Special needs students who earn the number of credits necessary for graduation, with modifications outlined in their individualized education plan, will receive a regular diploma, while those who do not will receive a certificate of completion or certificate of attendance as appropriate for their IEP. Local media, Watsonauer to lead newsrooms. Staff report, Bloomington. Kelsey Watsonauer, a respected reporter and editor who rose through the ranks of the Pantograph newsroom, has been named executive editor of the Pantograph, the Herald and Review in Decatur, the Journal Gazette and Times Courier in Mattoon, and the Woodford County Journal in Eureka. Watsonauer began her career at the Pantograph in 2018 and has become a central figure in its editorial leadership, serving as reporter, city editor, and most recently local news editor, directing daily news coverage. In the latter role, Watsonauer also oversaw opinion content for all of the Central Illinois news organization. A graduate of Murray State University with a bachelor's degree in journalism, Watsonauer is a Central Illinois native who grew up in the rural community of Yates City. Her reporting has earned multiple first place awards from the Illinois Press Association, including in News Reporting 2022 and Localized National Story 2023. I am truly honored to have the opportunity to lead our Central Illinois newsrooms and to continue working to bring valuable stories to our readers, Watznauer said. Our communities are at the core of everything we do, and in my time here, I have been lucky enough to meet so many of the people who make them special. I hope to do them justice as we strive to keep our readers informed about what is happening in the world around them. Watznauer succeeds Allison Petty, who has served as executive editor since 2022. Petty will transition to a more focused role as director of local news for Lee Enterprises, the parent of the Pantograph and more than 70 publications across the U.S. Petty is helping lead the company's central audience team and digital initiatives. She will continue to live in Bloomington and work closely with the newsroom, including serving as a member of the paper's editorial board. Kelsey is a thoughtful, steady, and principled leader with a deep understanding of our communities and our mission, Petty said. She's earned the trust of her newsroom and the respect of her peers, and I'm thrilled to see her take on this next challenge. Mark Chase, Senior Director of Local News for Lee Enterprises, who oversees the company's newsrooms in Illinois, Iowa, and other states, described Watznauer as a veteran journalist in our Central Illinois markets. She understands our readers, their communities, and their urgent need for the best and most relevant local news. We look forward to the direction she'll provide our newsrooms in Bloomington, Decatur, and Mattoon, he said. Local news editor Scott Perry will maintain direct oversight of the newsrooms in Decatur and Mattoon. Regional sports editor Justin Kahn will continue to lead sports coverage for all of the Central Illinois news organizations. Roger Miller will serve as managing editor of the Pantograph. A lifelong McLean County resident and Illinois State University alumnus, Miller brings deep knowledge of the community and newsroom operations, with decades of experience in reporting, editing, and mentoring journalists. He has held a wide range of roles in the newsroom and will play a central role in shaping coverage and supporting day-to-day leadership. Robin Skaggs, regional features editor for all of the Central Illinois newspapers, will also transition to a new role, with her promotion as a senior producer for Lee Enterprises National Newsroom. She will continue to work in the Bloomington newsroom and represent the Pantograph in community settings, including the Goodfellow Fund nonprofit board. But her new focus will shift to supporting local newsrooms across the company's portfolio. Watznauer credited her former editors for helping her shape her leadership style. I'm especially grateful to have been able to learn from the editors I've worked with at the Pantograph, most recently Allison Petty and Chris Coates, and before them, Mark Pickering and Julie Girk, she said. They all have navigated the ever-changing news industry and our evolving community with grace and skill, and I know I would not be the journalist I am today without their guidance and leadership. She said she's grateful to take on the role with a strong team in place across the region. The journalists in each of our Central Illinois markets impress and inspire me every day, she said. I look forward to continuing to work with this excellent team to serve our readers. Mint Press's Final Penny by Mary Claire Dale, Associated Press, Philadelphia. The U.S. Mint in Philadelphia struck its last circulating penny on Wednesday after the president canceled the one-cent coin. President Donald Trump ordered its demise as costs climb to almost 4 cents per penny and the one-cent valuation becomes somewhat obsolete. The U.S. Mint has been making pennies in Philadelphia, the nation's birthplace, since 1793, a year after Congress passed the Coinage Act. Today, there are billions of them in circulation, but they are rarely essential for financial transactions in the modern economy or the digital age. For far too long, the United States has minted pennies, which literally cost us more than 2 cents, Trump wrote in an online post in February as costs continued to climb. This is so wasteful. Still, many people have a nostalgia for them, seeing them as lucky or fun to collect. Some retailers voiced concerns in recent weeks as supplies ran low and the last production neared. They said the phase-out was abrupt and came with no guidance from the federal government on how to handle customer transactions. Some rounded prices down to avoid shortchanging people. Others pleaded with customers to bring exact change, and the more creative among them gave out prizes, such as a free drink in exchange for a pile of pennies. We have been advocating abolition of the penny for 30 years, but this is not the way we wanted it to go, Jeff Lenard of the National Association of Convenience Stores said last month. Some banks, meanwhile, began rationing supplies, a somewhat paradoxical result of the effort to address what many see as a glut of the coins. Over the last century, about half of the coins made at U.S. mints in Philadelphia and Denver have been in pennies. U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent and Treasurer Brandon Beach were expected to be in Philadelphia on Wednesday afternoon for the final production run. The Treasury Department expects to save $56 million per year on materials by ceasing to make them. But they still have a better production cost-to-value ratio than the nickel, which costs almost 14 cents to make. The diminutive dime, by comparison, costs less than 6 cents to produce, and the quarter nearly 15 cents. Back in 1793, a penny could get you a biscuit, a candle, or a piece of candy. These days, many sit in drawers or glass jars and are basically cast aside or collected as lucky keepsakes. No matter their face value, collectors and historians consider them an important record of society, one that can be traced back for more than 200 years. Frank Holt, an emeritus professor at the University of Houston, who studies the history of coins, laments the loss of that through line when it comes to the penny. We put mottos on them and self-identifiers, and we decide, in the case of the United States, which dead persons are most important to us and should be commemorated, he said. They reflect our politics, our religion, our art, our sense of ourselves, our ideals, our aspirations. Courts. Armed Felon Gets 3 Years, by Tony Reed, Decatur. The felon whose shooting and wounding outside of the old King's Orchard Community Center shocked the Decatur community is now serving a 3-year sentence for illegally possessing a gun. Jamar Thomas, 21, admitted being a felon in possession of a weapon when he appeared before Judge Jeffrey Geisler in Macon County Circuit Court. Further charges accused him of the aggravated unlawful possession of a firearm and the possession of a stolen gun were dismissed by the judge as part of a plea deal. Thomas had been lucky to escape with his life after an unknown gunman targeted him outside the community center on the morning of July 17th and opened fire. Thomas was hit, but not wounded seriously amid a fusillade of bullets fired at him. The surrounding Old King's Orchard neighborhood has seen many incidents of gun violence, but this was the first time that violence had intruded on the grounds of the community center itself. The building is regarded as a haven that works to help people seeking refuge from a street culture of gangs and crime, and Thomas had been working there when he was shot. Devon Joyner, the center's executive director, had described Thomas as a man trying to turn his life around after he had been sentenced to a year in prison in June of 2024 for the aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. He was in the process of getting his driver's license this week, Joyner had told the Herald and Review in the wake of Thomas's shooting. He's a young man who has really done everything to change his life. But the defendant found himself in trouble again after Decatur Police Department patrol officers arrived to try and break up a massive street party at North Illinois and East Main Streets in the early hours of August 10th. Police used a squad car's loudspeaker system to tell the crowd to disperse. But a sworn affidavit said officers noticed a group of known gun offenders among them who then took off running. Thomas was part of the group and refused commands to stop until he was shot with a stun gun. Officers recovered a loaded gun magazine near where he fell and seized a Smith & Wesson handgun with a live round in the chamber that had been tucked into his waistband. Police had been on high alert for gun violence the weekend that Thomas had been arrested. Another huge street party barely 24 hours earlier in the 1100 block of East Main Street had seen two people shot and wounded. And police arriving on scene had reported hearing the sound of bullets zipping through the air above their heads. Thomas received his prison sentence when he made an appearance in court October 7th. His case had previously been scheduled for a pretrial hearing November 4th until he changed his mind and took the plea deal negotiated by defense attorney Caleb Brown. As for Thomas's own shooting and wounding, there have been no arrests made yet. But Deputy Police Chief Scott Rosenberry, in charge of the Criminal Investigations Division, told the Herald and Review Tuesday that it remains an active investigation. Illinois. Tax change advances. Proposal decouples Fed and state taxes. Biz owners angered. By Ben Zielinski, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. Illinois lawmakers are sending a bill to Governor J.B. Pritzker that makes a pair of changes to Illinois' tax code in response to new federal tax provisions that could reduce state revenue. The governor's Office of Management and Budget projected last month that Illinois is on track to run a $267 million deficit in fiscal year 2026. That's partially a result of corporate tax cuts enacted at the federal level as part of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, officially known as House Resolution 1, that President Donald Trump signed on July 4th. Many states like Illinois tie sizable portions of the tax code to the federal government's policies. That means H.R. 1 would also reduce the amount of revenue the state receives unless Illinois takes action. Pritzker's budget office recommended in its report last month that state lawmakers pass a bill to decouple parts of the state's corporate tax code from the federal tax code to address this year's deficit and allow the state to receive taxes it otherwise would not have received because of H.R. 1. The House voted 76-33 and the Senate 37-19 to pass Senate Bill 1911. If signed by the governor, it would erase about $250 million from the projected fiscal year 2026 deficit. The purpose, ultimately, is to make sure that we can pay the bills in the state of Illinois and not be hampered by Donald Trump and the big government bill, Pritzker told reporters in Springfield the week before last. Tax changes. One change approved by Congress allows manufacturers to claim a larger deduction for assets as soon as they go into service, allowing businesses to save more money in the short term. By stopping that change from applying to Illinois, the state would save $144 million in FY26, according to an analysis by Senate Democrats shared with Capital News Illinois. One change would actually align Illinois' tax code with the federal government by redefining a tax on businesses' overseas profits that state lawmakers passed in May as part of the FY26 budget. That ensures the state can collect an expected $90 million in revenue from the tax this year. The state is also extending a measure that was put in place in 2021 pertaining to filing taxes as pass-through entities. Senate Democrats say it will save businesses money on federal taxes without impacting state coffers. It was slated to expire this year, but will be made permanent under the measure. That's revenue that doesn't have to go to D.C., that can stay here in Illinois, Taxpayers Federation of Illinois President Maurice Schulten told Capital News Illinois. Illinois business owners can spend it in the communities or further invest in their businesses and expand and hire additional workers. Arts and entertainment. Dreamcast ready for show. Legally Blonde musical opens November 14th at Decatur Civic Center. By Danette Beckett, Decatur. A A couple of chihuahuas may be the star of the latest Decatur Underground Theater show, Legally Blonde, the musical. One is about 3.5 pounds, director Sandy Rivas said about one of the pooches. The other is probably no more than 4 pounds. The cast will be on stage November 14th through 16th and 21st through 23rd at the Decatur Civic Center. One chihuahua, Hazel, is on stage as Rufus. The other, Poppy, was cast in the role of Bruiser Woods. She was born without her 2 front legs, but that doesn't stop her, Rivas said. She still owns the room. Olivia Swords is the fortunate actor who will carry her fellow actor throughout the play. She's such a sweet little dog, she said. Swords has noticed Poppy gets a little nervous around such a large cast, especially when everyone is singing pretty loud, she said. So we try to handle her with care. Poppy's time on stage is limited, allowing her space away from others, including the audience, and in the hands of her owners. The Legally Blonde story is about Elle Woods, portrayed by Swords as she follows a love interest to law school after she's been rejected. Although the lead character appears to have it all, she soon has her life turned upside down. What's good about this story is that it teaches you that if you want to do something and want to go for it, you can do that, Rivas said. Nothing can hold you back. The musical comedy is based on the 2001 film Legally Blonde, featuring Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Coolidge. According to the DUT director, the local cast is ideal for the show. This cast, to be honest, is a director's dream cast to have, Rivas said. It'll show on stage. The music is also uplifting, Rivas added. It's very upbeat. It's fast, catchy, she said, and all of the songs are kind of attached together. Swords has performed on Decatur stages with various actors in the past, including past Decatur Underground Theater musicals. However, Poppy adds a new experience. I've never worked directly with an animal or a dog on stage, she said. It's been new, but it's been so much fun getting to have her on stage with me. If you go, what? Legally Blonde, the musical. When? 7 p.m. Fridays and Saturdays, November 14th, 15th, 21st, 22nd. 2 p.m. Sundays, November 16th and 23rd. Where? Decatur Civic Center, 1 Gary K. Anderson Plaza. Tickets, $19 or $24. Online or call 217-422-7300. On the web, www.decaturunderground.com. Illinois, Lincoln Museum showing Gettysburg Address by Olivia Jacobs, Springfield. An original edition of the Gettysburg Address is on display for a limited time at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. The document is part of a new exhibit, Lincoln, A Life and Legacy That Defined a Nation. Free museum admission will be offered on Wednesday, November 19th, in honor of the 162nd anniversary of Lincoln's delivery of the speech at the site of the historic battle in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Historians will host free Q&A sessions exploring the history and lasting impact of the Gettysburg Address at 11 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. on November 19th, 20th, and 21st. The museum said it is the only place in the country where the public can regularly view Lincoln's most famous speech in his handwriting. In previous years, display of the document was limited to 10 days to protect it from being damaged by exposure to light. But new protective technology has allowed the time period to be extended. Guests who wish to see the exhibit without touring the entire museum can purchase a ticket to do so for $5. The address is on display through December 1st, when a signed copy of the Emancipation Proclamation will replace it. The museum at 212 North 6th Street, Springfield, is open daily from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., with last admittance at 4 p.m. Admission is $15 for adults, $12 for seniors and students, $10 for military personnel, $6 for children ages 5 to 15, and free for children 4 and under and museum members. This article is accompanied by a photograph of an etching of Lincoln making the speech. It is captioned, "This undated illustration depicts President Abraham Lincoln making his Gettysburg Address at the dedication of the Gettysburg National Cemetery on the battlefield at Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, on November 19, 1863. The illustration was provided by the Library of Congress. Digest. Official. Boycott of G20 summit a loss for U.S. Cape Town, South Africa. U.S. President Donald Trump's decision that the United States government boycott the Group of 20 summit next weekend in South Africa is their loss, South Africa's leader said Wednesday. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa added that the United States needs to think again whether boycott politics actually works, because in my experience, it doesn't work. Trump announced last week on social media that no U.S. government official would attend the November 22nd through 23rd meeting of leaders from 19 of the world's richest and leading developing economies in Johannesburg, citing his widely rejected claims that members of a white minority group in South Africa are being violently persecuted. Bishops, no trans care at Catholic hospitals. U.S. Catholic bishops voted Wednesday to make official a ban on gender-affirming care for transgender patients at Catholic hospitals. The step formalizes a years-long process for the U.S. Church to address transgender health care. From a Baltimore hotel ballroom, the bishops overwhelmingly approved revisions to their ethical and religious directives that guide the nation's thousands of Catholic healthcare institutions and providers. More than 1 in 7 patients in the U.S. are treated each day at Catholic hospitals, according to the Catholic Health Association. Catholic hospitals are the only medical center in some community. Briefly, airline schedules. Flight reductions at 40 major U.S. airports will remain at 6% instead of rising to 10% by the end of the week, because more air traffic controllers are coming to work, the Department of Transportation and the Federal Aviation Administration announced Wednesday. BBC. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer refused to say Wednesday whether he would urge U.S. President Donald Trump to drop his threat to sue the BBC for $1 billion over the broadcaster's edit of a speech he made after losing the 2020 presidential election. Tuberculosis. The number of people diagnosed with tuberculosis worldwide rose again last year, World Health Organization officials said Wednesday. About 8.3 million people across the globe were reported as newly diagnosed with TB in 2024. Not all infections are diagnosed, the WHO noted. We'll take a break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, November 13th, 2025. Please stay tuned.